Hello, hockey humans of the world. Welcome to Tough Call Podcast Season 3, where I talk about all the latest hits and suspensions around the NHL. Thanks to you folks, I have over 3,000 Twitter followers and over 250 subscribers to my YouTube channel, which is where you'll find my in-depth video breakdowns of the plays I cover here on the audio podcast. Just go to YouTube and search Tough Call Channel to find me there. And to get the most out of your overall Tough Call experience, the best thing you can do is follow me everywhere you can by subscribing to the YouTube channel Tough Call and leaving comments there, following me on Twitter, at Tough Call Pod, and my other account, at NHL Call. And of course, hitting the subscribe button on this Tough Call audio podcast and giving it a 5-star rating right now. Thanks very much for the support. I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey. I want to put the hockey back in hitting. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Tough Call Podcast Season 3, Episode 3, which, because I'm a couple days late getting it out, it'll cover the period from January 9th to January 19th, 2022, instead of just a one-week period like I usually do. At Tough Call, I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey. I want to put the hockey back in hitting. And night after night in the NHL, we see time and time again how that shift in mentality would improve player safety and, in my opinion, improve the overall quality of play of the NHL product. And it seems a number of you agree. My YouTube channel broke the 350 subscriber mark a few days ago. And as of this recording, my videos have been viewed over 160,000 times. I very much appreciate the support and the feedback, and also the counter-arguments. Those are important. Not agreeing with me all the time is what keeps this fun and what helps shape the future of where we want safety of hockey to go. With very few exceptions, the debates have been good-spirited, and eventually they end up in at least some sort of common ground with some give and take both ways, which is awesome. And the important thing is it's become something we now consciously think about. Should anything be different in hockey? And if so, could we make it happen? Do we, as the general public, as the consumer, have the capacity to make it happen? And with every day, the answer is getting closer and closer to being yes. And with that, I'll jump into this week's WTFs. The NHL's Department of Player Safety issued 2 suspensions and 4 fines over the course of last week. There was a 3-gamer to the Islanders' Ross Johnston for an illegal check to the head, and I agree with that one. It was the same problem as we had last week with Sam Bennett and Brad Richardson. It's all about the angle of approach coming across the body and clipping the head instead of the core. That east-west approach has to change. Players have to be smarter about trying to get the core and changing the angle of approach. So I'm on board with the 3 games there for sure. And Chris Weidman got 1 game from the real NHL for headbutting. Now, this one in the Tough Call NHL, I think, should be longer. And here's why. I get there's a scrum, and I get that Weidman's arms are wrapped up, and he's being held from behind against his will. And believe me, in my NHL, they treat these post-whistle scrums like the potentially highly dangerous situations they are. But in today's NHL, for the time being, that's not the case. So it's understandable Weidman would want to do something to show he's not going to just sit there and let anything happen to him with someone grabbing him like that. I appreciate that. So even though headbutting is a match penalty, and even though it's something I never ever want to see, if I were running today's NHL, I'd probably go a little easy on him too. But even in today's environment, I'd still have to recognize, you know what? It's still a match penalty. It's still a headbutt. Situation and lack of force considered in the punishment, but the act of headbutting still needs to be kept out of the game. My 3-5 game category is for any major penalties resulting in light contact. This is including headbutting. So I'd be comfortable slotting this in the 3-5 game range and giving Weidman 4 games for the headbutt. Then there's the Dmitry Orlov kneeing incident to Nikolaj Ehlers. He got 2 games, Orlov did, from the league, and I also would have given him 2 games. I have a video for that one on my Tough Call YouTube channel explaining why, so you should go look at that. But basically, it's just a guy trying to make a hockey play, and he missed. So there's no malintent, but also it was a little too drastic of an action to let it go as just an in-game penalty. So that's why I want to suspend. We have to make players be aware that while it isn't really that bad, it still could have been much better. That's the thing. They could have done things better. So a light suspension there is perfect, just for that gentle reminder. A couple of the fines were the one on Calvin DeHaan and the one on Braden Point, and both were for the ever-popular dangerous trip, which, to me, has become the alternative slew foot, I guess you could say. Now, I'll be honest, I haven't even seen the Point one yet, because there's been so many incidents just in the last few days alone people have sent me, I can't keep up with them, which is awesome, and keep them coming, and I appreciate that kind of problem from a content point of view. It's a good problem to have for me. But if as Tough Call, I have so much material to cover that it's too much for me, it's all the better for me. But if you're the actual NHL, it's probably not the best situation. And two of the big reasons for that are, one, the lack of meaningful punishments, and two, the lack of consistency in applying the punishments they do have. And the Calvin DeHaan dangerous trip is a case in point for all that. To me, it's pretty obvious. The foot clearly stretches out in an unnatural fashion. Unnatural, that is, in terms of what a player would reasonably be expected to do for a hockey purpose. And there's a clear upper body motion throwing Caulfield back. Now, could it have been harder? Absolutely. It wasn't lethally dangerous, but when you compare to what he should be doing as a hockey player in that moment, is it anywhere close? I mean, let's recognize right off the bat, Caulfield doesn't even have the puck. He's not even eligible to be checked at all. So even a clean check in this case would still be a penalty. So now on top of that, you're also going to deliver a check in one of the most illegal ways there is, even by the actual rulebook standard? When you look at it that way, why is suspension even a question here? And especially since this type of incident has happened so many times in the last 3 seasons, they had to coin a new term, the term dangerous trip, to distinguish it from a proper slew foot, which, by the way, I think this DeHaan one is a proper slew foot to me. But like I said, there's been so many of these, and most go unpenalized both in-game and after the fact. And when they are punished, it's only a small fine. So if I were a player, I'd add that to my list of desperation or aggravation tactics too. Why wouldn't I? The punishment doesn't fit the crime, so it's not going to stop it. So why wouldn't I keep doing it? Now, even with all that, there's still more incidents to talk about, including my incident of the week. And there was definitely a lot to choose from. It was a difficult choice, or some might even say it was a tough call. But I think I'll go with the Jordan Greenway goaltender interference on Avalanche goaltender Darcy Kemper. This was my most popular video over the last week or so. The video of just the clip of the incident alone without my breakdown got over 1,300 views. And my breakdown video at the time of this recording has almost 1,700 views and a ton of comments. I can't believe how divided people are on this. Darcy Kemper is a goaltender. He is ineligible to be checked. And Jordan Greenway had a clear escape route that he could have taken. He made a clear shift in path of travel to create contact where contact doesn't need to be there. That's what I said in my video. It's crazy that people are thinking that this was just some sort of hockey play, some sort of incidental contact. I'm not saying it was malicious. I'm not saying he intended to do it, but it's exceptionally avoidable and needless. I don't understand. And he didn't act like a person who didn't think he was about to run into someone. He went straight through. He didn't do anything to soften the blow that he created. And again, even if you think he just turned and accidentally hit someone, he caused this situation by making a really, really odd choice when he had other options. There's no way that you can look at this and say it was just something that should happen in a hockey game. He had other choices. He should have made better choices, and we have to ask him to make those. And he's not going to make them if you don't give him a meaningful punishment. So that's where I'm at on that. To me, the incident of the week shouldn't be that this incident happened and I'm talking about it. It should be that I have to talk about it, and I can't believe there are people trying to argue it the other way. That's the incident of the week to me. This episode's by request comes from Twitter follower at RoboStop10. They've been very gracious about sending me a bunch of clips lately, or tagging me in them and notifying me of a lot of incidents, and I very much appreciate it. And regarding the Drouin cross-check, they tagged me in a tweet that they said Orlov's kneeing wasn't even close to being the worst incident of the evening, and they sent the YouTube clip of Drouin's cross-check. And I thought that comment was pretty funny and also very accurate. And now I've got a video breaking this incident down, the Drouin cross-check, of course, so please go have a watch. But it's two pretty intentional cross-checks to the head of a player down on the ice. So under my system, there should be no doubt. I mean, that's an easy thing to declare is a pretty bad thing when you think about it. When you think about what hockey players are actually supposed to be doing at any given time, are two cross checks to the head anything realistically close to that? And the fact that in real life, this isn't that obvious a suspension is more what the focus should be rather than trying to explain to anyone what was actually wrong here. It should be blatantly obvious what's wrong here, but that's the world we live in. A world where a player trying to do the right thing like Orlov and making a simple mistake is given a 2-game suspension
and a guy who takes a stick in two hands and drives the shaft down on another player's skull twice gets a fine. That's where the NHL and a lot of the fan base is at right now. And I know I've heard people say, oh, he was just retaliating because Sagan cross-checked him first. Montreal fans, God love them, they take their suspensions very seriously. And whenever I decide to suspend a Hab, I don't do it lightly because I know the wave is coming. There's a lot of passion there, which is fantastic. And a few of them demanded a Sagan video too for his cross-check. But if you watch my Drouin video with the clip in it, Sagan and Drouin were taking a face-off and Sagan pushed forward and his stick came up. Yes, it was a little excessive, and the stick did hit Drouin in the face, but it wasn't a full-on outward motion cross-check with arm extension so much as it was a high stick caused by a somewhat careless forward drive through a face-off. It would be enough to annoy me if I was Drouin, and should have been enough for a minor penalty probably, but that's about it. That's no cause to shove a guy to the ice, jump on him, and decapitate him. And yes, I know that's an exaggeration of what happened, but so is what you guys are saying anything Sagan did, so it goes both ways. It reminds me of the scene in the movie Dumb and Dumber when Mary playfully tosses snow at Harry, and Harry reacts by grabbing an ice ball and launching it square in their face. The reaction is plainly and simply beyond what you should reasonably expect for what Sagan did. A minor penalty versus a severe major or match penalty cross-check to the head. As some of you might know, I recently signed on with the Heavy Hockey Network, and I was on one of our podcasts, the Oilers Live podcast, which goes every Tuesday night. Well, actually, very early Wednesday morning for us East Coast Oilers fans, so look for them Wednesday mornings. But on the last episode, I was asked, what is your motivation for doing Tough Call? And listening back to my answer, I'd like to expand on what I meant in terms of a safer and better product. So here's the thing. I talk about the types of hockey fans last week on my podcast, Tough Call Pod, and I know most people who listen to this are NHL fans purely and strictly, but it's important to understand hockey is more than just the NHL, and Tough Call is about more than the NHL. It's about making hockey safer. It's about making hockey better. The NHL is an important component of hockey as a whole, but talking about my motivation for this, it comes down to recognizing players, all players, including NHL players, are human beings, and putting them in our minds where we take away all the equipment and imagine what the bodies inside are doing to each other on purpose in the name of a sport, a game, hockey. It's all well and fine until a player like Bowen Byram doesn't feel like he can play hockey anymore because of three concussions in a year. You see Jake Muzzin out right now, Neil Pionk, Jake Allen is out right now. Those are all in the last month or two. And Darcy Kemper, he just had that needless close call with Jordan Greenway that I talked about. And the story of Michael Ferland and Stephen Johns, both of who had their careers ended by concussions before the age of 30. And this is all just recent examples off the top of my head without even searching. You take that back a decade, two decades, see how many you get. If you actually research, there's so many players that had their careers ended by concussions, or their careers didn't even get a start, like say Brett Lindros, because of concussions. And yes, this is the NHL, and they get paid a lot of money to play there, and I laughed so hard because just as I was writing this, a YouTube comment came up on one of my videos about the Drouin cross-check, and the person literally said, word for word, like, they get paid millions of dollars, we pay to see a violent product. And these players know what they signed up for, and every little excuse in the book like that. But yeah, they get paid a lot of money to be there. But once you sign an NHL contract, your brain doesn't magically get any less vulnerable than anyone else's. And just because you get heavily financially compensated, it doesn't give an employer the right to put you in an unnecessarily dangerous situation in relation to the type of job you're being paid to do, which is, remember, playing hockey. No amount of money can buy back mental health, physical, neurological health, and even if it could, it can't buy back any time lost from years in some cases from preventable recovery situations. And that's just the somewhat lucky ones in a way. They have access to that medical support to properly deal with concussions and the financial means to take the time off to properly heal. Remember, this is all about all hockey players. What about the ones who have their careers ended before they even get their shots to reach their potential? I'm always reminded of my friend, Rowan Sears, a local guy where I live. He had to make the painful choice as a teenager to give up playing hockey completely, to give up something he loves. And in his case, based on his talent level, probably a shot at having his education paid for at worst, and at most, who knows where he could have gone. And he had to give that up. I think about my own two kids who play right now. I have an 11-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter. My 11-year-old son recently took a violent hit into the boards. And I know it's going to happen in hockey. Some hockey has contact. It's going to happen, but it was called a penalty. But that is in a level with no contact. I wasn't at that particular game, but from the sounds of it, it was something that we see routinely at the NHL level. And sometimes it's called a penalty. Sometimes it's actually promoted as an example of a clean and textbook check, depending on whether or not the player gets hit. That's what it comes down to sometimes for what a penalty is and isn't, is the result, the injury, not the play itself. That's the beauty of the tough call system, is unlike the NHL rules and disciplinary system that seems to be only about reluctantly punishing things after they've already caused an injury, tough call is designed to be more like, but kind of unique to the overall philosophy of other hockey governing bodies. Remember, hockey has other governing bodies. The NHL isn't the be-all, end-all. We have Hockey Canada, Hockey USA, the NCAA, the IIHF as an example, the CHL. They all have their own rules. And those governing bodies kind of adopt the concept, believe it or not, of preventing injuries before they happen. Imagine that, by encouraging players to make choices that are less likely to cause the injury in the first place, as opposed to the NHL. And we heard that fan on YouTube say it, and many people say it all the time to me, is, yeah, but this is the NHL. They get paid millions of dollars. They know what they signed up for. They're supposed to be danger. That's the product we want. That's a bad way of looking at things. Right now, the motto of hockey is, particularly NHL hockey, is to very slowly try to take some dangerous things out of the game here and there and see if it kind of helps a little. But if we truly believe there's a concussion problem, a need to try and reduce head injuries and all injuries, if there's a real appetite for meaningfully protecting players, which judging by my following and by the way my videos are being received, there is that appetite, then wouldn't it make sense to make a significant change and then slowly lessen that stricter standard as players get better and smarter and adapt more? You take things away from them and then slowly reel them back in and you see what's dangerous and what isn't, as opposed to allowing all the danger to keep happening and only pulling some things apart and watching injury after injury happen. To me, the NHL product and hockey in general can be very close to the same as it is now entertainment-wise and integrity-wise and maintaining the integrity of the game and still be significantly safer without taking away from all that. So what's there to lose? And even if, let's just say, for a few years, they give my system a real shot, a legitimate crackdown, and it turns out I'm wrong. What if I'm wrong? What if you guys are all right and I will ruin the game? If it turns out I have, in fact, ruined the game, it'd be pretty easy to just go back to the way things are, to go back to letting players beat each other senseless, literally senseless. And maybe the worst that happens is, in those few years where I ruined the game, I accidentally and unnecessarily saved a few brains in the process. As always, we'll end off with a little bit of fun trivia. So last week's question was, on November 11th, 1981, the Minnesota North Stars beat the Winnipeg Jets 15-2, and in the process, they set an NHL record for a number of different players scoring a goal in a game. The question was, how many different individual players scored the 15 Minnesota goals? And the answer is a staggering 11 different players, not just with points in the game, with goals. That will never happen again. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. Now, this week's question. In 2005-06, Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin both had 100 points in the same season as rookies, which is incredible considering only 7 rookies have ever had 100-point seasons at all. And these guys both did it in the same year. But what's interesting is they were the second pair of rookies to do that. So the question is, who are the first two rookies to score 100 points in the same season? And I'll have that answer for you next week. Who are the first two rookies to score 100 points in the same season? And for fun, if you can name all 7 rookies with 100 points, that would be fun too. But I'm looking for the two that had 100 points in the same year. So I'll have the answer for you next week. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time.
At Tough Call, I'm not trying to pick on specific teams or individual players. I want to make the game safer for every player on every team, across every league, really, with no player left behind. I want to cover as many incidents as I possibly can to increase the sample size and make a stronger case for how harsher penalties and properly targeted player education can work in reducing head contact in hockey, all instances of it. The Department of Player Safety supposedly has people watching every second of every game. Now, as much as I'd like to watch every game, as much as I try to, and as much as I'd like to have video of every questionable incident, the truth is, I'm only one man with an iPhone and the Game Center app. I already get a lot of help from people like you who send me videos or links to incidents, or even just a quick tweet or message saying, hey, did you see? Third period, Bolts-Kings game, checking to the head penalty. Something like that. It means a lot, and it makes a huge difference. Follow me on Twitter at ToughCallBlog, and like the Facebook page ToughCall, and as you watch, if you see a cheap play or something dirty or anything that makes you go, hey, you idiot, what are you watching? How did you miss that? Please send it my way, and a big thank you to those of you who already do. Keep them coming.